Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And the Bottle-O. For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
Great to have your company here on Sports Day tonight. Carl Langdon and Paul Hazelby with you. Nick Natanui to join us shortly, and we'll have a chat to Harry Taylor tonight. Also, Craig Fleer, who is going to umpire a grand final for the very first time. Liam Guthrie to talk about the day's play in the Sheffield Shield cricket. WA 2 for 152 at Stups. Whiteman is 81 not out. Green 31 out after New South Wales declared at 6 for 443. And in the other game, Tasmania in control after bowling South Australia out yesterday for 195 at Stumps of 5 for 311. A short time ago, Ken Hinckley was announced as Coach of the Year for 2020. Cam Shepherd to coach Peel Thunder for 2021. And the tickets sold out, as you just heard in the news with John Nicholls, in 20 minutes. They started at $185 today, and the capacity has been capped at 30 grand. So that's a minimum of $5.5 million that the AFL have been able to generate by selling those tickets today. Paul Hazelby, good evening to you.
Great to be with you, Carl. A little bit sore today, I must admit, particularly in one part of my body, but ready to push through. Can't wait for a big show. And as always, lots of talk around the trade table.
Yeah, there has been plenty of talk around the trade table. And of course, Jeremy Cameron wants out at GWS. At Geelong, he's expected to appear. And now we've got a situation where Jai Caldwell, who is the number one pick in 2018, he's been courted by Essendon and St Kilda, and he played nine games in 2020. And there's some big offers on the table. And what it's actually done, Hayes, is that the Giants footy boss, Jason McCartney, has urged the AFL and the AFL Players Association to disallow big rival offers to second-year players who are coming out of contract, saying that it isn't fair for young players to have to go through that process. Now, this comes from a bloke who was in the position at the Western Bulldogs when he offered the same levels of money to Tom Boyd to leave the Giants. How do you feel about this?
Pot calling kettle black, but he does make some good points, I do believe, that it is getting out of control for young players. There's a lot of poaching going on, and I think the AFL need to look at some of these rules, whether they make it mandatory that you have to do a certain time at a particular club. But, you know, it is becoming a bit silly for younger players who go to a club. They might be there in their first or second years, and all of a sudden it might not be working for them. They can get offered big contracts to go home, and I don't think that is good for younger players. It teaches them bad lessons. It doesn't make them work through some of their problems and their troubles and earn their position in those teams. But we've seen some big ones. Tom Boyd, of course, the massive one, and we know how that fared. They did get a premiership, though, but it hasn't worked out for me. But the GWS Giants, they continue to lose good players, Carl. And imagine a club right now, a Melbourne club with Matt Rout. Like, what could you be willing to offer that bloke in this year's trade period to bring him back? Would you be willing to go to 10 years? That is ridiculous money, ridiculous time frame as well. But do you think they should be hard and fast with a rule to prevent this from happening?
Well, see, what I don't like, Hayes, is probably the weaker clubs being in a situation where they're losing their very good players to the stronger clubs. And this case is one in point when it comes to Jeremy Cameron. I mean, here he is leaving a development club, which has been set up by the AFL, a new and emerging market in the greater Western Sydney part of our country. And here he is going to a strong club like Geelong, who are playing off at a grand final. Is that right? And should it extend even further? Now, the problem is that the AFL have created more freedom of movement. This is something that the players have wanted. They want to be able to move around when they like, mate. They don't even want to be restricted free agents, let alone free agents. He is still a restricted free agent, which means that there is some control for the Greater Western Sydney Giants in that they can command high draft picks and they can match the price if they really want to. And there are some mechanisms in place where the AFL will compensate them quite kindly for this sort of scenario. But look, in the end, is it really serving the purpose? 922-1882. I'd love to hear from the footy fans. And whilst we're on that point, Hayes, of course, the reports emerged today that Jesse Hogan has got a year to go at Freo and Connor Blakely has got 2 years to go at Freo. Been offered up as trade bait by Freo, and there was a link today for Jesse Hogan to Sydney.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. We discussed this a couple of weeks ago, even last week, about the Fremantle Dockers and whether Jesse Hogan was a good fit going forward. Now, I said at that stage that was about the attitude and whether they thought his attitude was at the level. Now, with this, I think Justin Longmuir is in his rights to make the big decisions because, let's be honest, last year when he took the position over, he didn't have much chance to make change. And you only get one chance to set the right culture for your football club. And I think that's why this decision has come about. Now, they still need to be satisfied. Fight the Fremantle Dockers if they go down this path, and there needs to be a suitor. And there are a number of clubs that are looking for key forwards, and ordinarily you'd say Jesse Hogan, key forward, absolutely. If we can get him and not have to pay that big salary, you'd be pretty happy with that. I'm talking about clubs like Collingwood, North Melbourne, the Bulldogs, Sydney, as you mentioned. But there is a big risk factor here with Jesse Hogan for clubs. There's the attitudinal, the off-field stuff, there's the mental health stuff, and there's also the injury, the on-field stuff as well, that his record over the last 3 years hasn't been great. Putting all that together, will a club be forthcoming with a big contract? I don't think so, but every player has a price, and Fremantle will have to work through that if they choose to go down this path. And the other one is Connor Blakely. Well, the writing was on the wall. I know Connor has said that he wants to stay at the football club, but when you're not getting an opportunity, and there's young midfielders coming through, there's going to be more high draft picks coming through, they're chasing more outside players as well to go through that midfield. I would be saying to him, if there's a club with interest and a coach that wants to show you some love, go and get it, because I still think he can play a very good role at AFL level. But you talk about these two contracts, Carl. We're talking about $1.3 million if both of these players are moved out and the clubs pay full whack, which I don't expect the clubs to pay full whack for these players, because Connor Blakely's been on some good money as well. That opens up a big world for the Fremantle Dockers, whether it's this year or next year, to have a big go at a big fish. And I'm not sure who that is right now.
Join the conversation, 922-1182, if you'd like to have your opinion. We love to hear your opinions out there. So join in. Sean in Baldivis has. G'day, mate.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. Yeah, I was going to say tongue-in-cheek, but yeah, weaker club to a stronger club. I was going to say Hogan to the Eagles. And I'd give pick 30 for it, and I reckon that'd be a pretty good deal.
So you'd be happy to take him on, would you?
I think so. With a view that JK, he's got 12 months left. I'd still put Darling as the number one man once JK's gone. But I think Hogan, as your second forward, would just be a really good option. There's a little bit less pressure on him. It allows Allen to still pinch hit in the ruck. I just think if they could get him in the right frame of mind, and Simo's a great coach, I could definitely see it working.
Alan and it keeps Waterman. Him at home too, doesn't it? That's an issue. He did want to come home. Of course, family involved, friends involved as well. Let's not forget that he did get through the year. He came back from his mental health challenges. He went away into the hub, survived it. Yes, there was the misdemeanor at the end when he got back. But, oh, geez, it's not the worst call in the world. Whether they make a move, the West Coast Eagles, I'm not sure about. But there are clubs that, at his best.
Zero chance, mate.
Feeling
Let me say
good.
This. Zero
yeah.
chance. Zero.
At his best, feeling good, good attitude. Geez, he's still got a lot to offer to an AFL environment. The big question is, can he get back to that?
Yeah, well, he won't be going to the Eagles, so I can guarantee you that. Let's go to Paul in Gosnells. G'day, Paul.
G'day, boys. I've got two things I wanted to talk about. One is to do with the AFL and just free agency. Much like the father and son rule is in place, do you think the AFL needs to look at the player that actually gets the player, maybe coughing up a certain amount of points to allocate back to the system? Because we're in a scenario now where Geelong are going to play off in the grand final. They've already got three first-round picks, a couple of trades in there, and they're probably going to get the best forward in the comp going to them. 2 years ago, we had Tom Lynch do the same thing, walked out, left, went to the Tigers, won a flag, and both Richmond also kept their number one draft pick that year. So do they need to look at, you can take the player, but it's going to cost you a certain number of points, and it might be 70% of what the value of the pick actually is, because basically you've got the entire competition giving to the best teams in the competition who are pillaging the smaller clubs.
Yeah, you make some good points. Look, we still have an equalisation policy in the AFL. You've got the draft. You also have the salary cap. So you can't keep on doing it all the time. And no doubt when you're at the top, and maybe it is a bit of a bit of credit for the work that teams have done to get to the top, that you do become a destination club. And it can choose too, because going back 4 years ago, we talked about the Brisbane Lions at length, about their club and their culture. Everybody was walking out. Daniel Rich was the only player to stay. Now, all of a sudden, Brisbane is the destination club. So if you do get it right as a club, you then, you know, bear the fruits of that labour and start to benefit as well. I've always thought maybe it's time to get rid of restricted and unrestricted free agency, that even after 3 years, I'd be happy for players to nominate a club. If they want to leave that club, nominate a club, and the AFL then provides the compensation back to the clubs. That then reduces the need for trades, and there's a set structure in place that if the contract length and price is at a certain area, then the compensation would be either at the end of their first round pick, at the end of their second round pick, at the end of their third, fourth, and so on. And that would stop a lot of this toing and froing with trading, which gets difficult and holds up the trade process. But we also know the AFL loves the trade process because they dominate the airwaves through the media for another 2 months, basically, after the season is finished.
I'd love to see them just get rid of the points, get rid of being able to trade picks. I think you should be trading players. I think clubs should be forced to pick the numbers that they are allocated. And the only movement that should happen are through current players that are in the system. They have made a system that was really easy to follow really, really complicated. Mm. And for me to sit here and try to explain it, Paul, is quite difficult because, mate, we'd need 3 hours to actually go through the intricate details that go into actually working out what points you got, what system it is. So, look, for me personally, I just wish that they went back to the way that it was. Maybe a little backward thinking to go forwards, but that's my view. 922-1182. Please join in. If you'd like to make your opinions heard, we'd love to have you involved in the program. We'll get back to more of your calls after this at 18 past 6.
Sports Day for Kia. Your new Kia Sorento has landed. And the Bottle-O. For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
Nick Natanui, the West Coast Eagles' fairest and best, will join us after the next break. And just repeating the news that Ken Hinckley has won the Coaches Association, voted by his peers as the 2020 Coach of the Year. Hayes, just to continue this discussion, I know Corey's going to join us from Meadow Springs in a moment. He's waiting patiently. 922-11882 if you'd like to join in. But Hayes, I reckon that the draft and trading is all done back to front. I'd actually like to see the actual national draft, where they get a chance to pick the best players in the country, whether they be the young or mature age players, done first. And then they go into the trade period, because they actually, by doing it that way, know what they've got. They know what they've got in the house to be able to move around. If they then want to trade out one of those young players they've just secured, then they can. I just feel that that way you've got actual real commodity to actually be able to do a deal with another club and maybe trade a bloke in. And then maybe once you get to the pre-season draft and the rookie draft, you can then have a target of what you've missed out on.
So you'd like to see the players that have just been drafted potentially then offloaded as part of some trade deals a month later?
I'd rather
that be fair
the
on the kids, though? Like, you've got 18-year-old kids maybe coming across the country and then they go, ah, no, we're sending you somewhere else as well. I think it raises the point about whether the clubs should have more control. I think the clubs should get more control and they can make decisions on where players end up. I think it's gone too far in favour of the players, and I was all for that at the start, because there was not much movement when I was playing. There certainly is now, and every player's got their rights to want to go to where they want to live and play, but I think it's gone too far. And I'd like to see the clubs take control back, and if they want to send players elsewhere, they should have that opportunity.
Corey, what do you reckon?
Hi, guys. I was just querying, you both have played, obviously, football at a very high level. Going back in time, would you have basically looked at taking a pay cut to go to a club that would have given you a better chance at a premiership? What would be more motivating for yourself? Just a bigger pay packet, like Gary Ablett Jr. when he went to the Gold Coast for a pay packet. He'd already won a couple of premierships. So what would be more important for someone, a premiership or just a good pay packet? What would motivate them more?
in hindsight, you'd probably say premierships, absolutely. I wish I had gone to another club and got premierships, but I wasn't lucky enough to do that. I think when you're going through it, there's no doubt that money and length of contract and stability in your own life is a big part of that. But I was one that had offers to go to other clubs, but always chose to stay at the Fremantle Dockers because I genuinely believed the whole time throughout my career that we would have success. It never eventuated, but I think part of the reason some players may leave is they've got to that point where they don't believe in their club. They then want to go and find another suitor. But that was me. What about you, Carl?
Well, I was lucky in that, Corey, when I got selected, I didn't have any choice because I was a pre-draft selection, so I didn't have to go into the draft. But I was also lucky that in the very first season at West Coast in 1988, we played finals. In fact, in the whole of my time at West Coast, we played finals every year. And I was lucky enough when I started playing footy at Subi that I played in two grand finals, the 86 winning grand final against East Fremantle, a losing grand final against Claremont in 1987. I finished in a grand final in 1995 playing for Subiaco when I lost to West Perth, Corey. So I had it lucky, mate, because I think the one thing that you want to do is when you go to any sport, it doesn't matter whatever level it is, I think you want to be playing in the team that's winning more than losing. I think that's how you enjoy it. That's how you enjoy it more. That's how you enjoy it more as fans, as people, as clubs, as everyone who's involved. So I think that, and I never worried about the money. I was lucky I had a job all the way through. I probably think that that would be better for the players today. I think sometimes they sit around probably doing too much when it comes to professional footy, and I think that they could probably put their minds somewhere else to think about other things than really garner themselves for what might not work out for them, Corey. I think that that was a real positive that I had the opportunity to do when I played. I would hope that there was probably some better mechanisms in place for players these days, because I think there's, you know, too many players that are not probably equipping themselves with what they need for the next step when they step outside of footy. So I see that as really important. But yeah, I was never a bloke that played for money, Corey. I used to give mine away half the time. So you can't say you play for money. You certainly play to win. And I would certainly much rather be playing for a team, Hayes, that I thought could win than one that I knew when I was going to run out there that wasn't going to win.
Yeah, that's true. But you look at some examples. Gary Ablett's one. Clearly, he left for money to go from a really good team, a premiership team. Buddy Franklin as well. So it does talk, and everybody's motivated by different things as well. I would like to see Carl a cap on the length of contracts, where the AFL just outrightly says, and I think all the clubs would be in agreement, that 5 years, that is it. That's the maximum length that any club can offer a player. And I think that makes it easier, and it protects the clubs as well. It protects the AFL from some big payouts in the future.
Just quickly ahead of Nick Natanui, who's going to join us shortly on the program. Look, Dylan McLaughlin has laid blame firmly at the situation that is surrounding Willie Rioli in his tribunal hearing, firmly at the feet of Asada, saying that he is frustrated by the inability to resolve cases sooner. And look, I know that this has been really frustrating, not only in Australian rules, but we've seen it in swimming and other sports, that we've got to get a better system. We all in Australian sport, as professional sportsmen and women, all sign up for the ASADA regime. The ASADA regime is agreed to through the Australian government because by us unilaterally being involved in that, it means that there is funding given out by our federal and state governments to each of the respective sports and more on a federal level. So I sort of have got to the point today, Hayes, after having a chat to a few people, hearing all the concerns aired on here on 882 6PR, is that why can we not get to a point where the AFL and the other codes, because they all have their own forms of testing, they test for illicit drugs, that includes cannabis, which is what was allegedly detected in the Willie Rioli case. Why can we not extend that testing to performance-enhancing drugs? And why can't we apply penalties that can be very similar and equivalent to what would be handed out by ASADA to get the process done far more effectively, far more efficiently, in what we would call is a more acceptable period of time? Do you think that that is something that we could work logically and evolve in Australian sport?
Look, I think the funding is very important to the sports as well, but also being independent, Carl. I think if you go that way, then the AFL loses its independence with that, which is not a good thing, because you do hear things from the AFL, some rumours and innuendo about certain players that may have got strikes and that in the past. And if they're in charge of it, then they can protect those certain players, protect their own brand as well, particularly with big names in the competition. I think if it is with a governing body like ASADA, you don't have those certain issues. I think clearly what needs to happen is just all the sporting bodies need to work with ASADA to make sure that there is an outcome or it is heard in the courts by a three-month time period. Waiting 12 months is just far too long. Everybody's frustrated, but we can't overlook the act that Willy Rioli did do, and I expect him to get far more than the 1 year that he's already served. I think he'll get at least 2 years, because tampering with a urine sample is clearly not on, and it will be frowned upon whatever sport you're playing. It's sad because we love Willie. He's been involved here, but they are the rules of the AFL and the governing bodies of the drug testing around the world.
Yeah, I've got no problem with him getting the 2 years either, if that's the case. But it's as to whether he gets four. And he should have been told if he's going to get 4 years so he can move on with his life far sooner than now. Anyway,
that's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Ring up 922-1182 if you've got an idea and your thoughts around that scenario. It's 7:29. Nick Natanui will join us next here on the program. 922-1182 if you would like to have a chat to us tonight. Welcome back to Sports Day. Well, the giant performance of the day has to be for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. Nick Natanui winning his very first West Coast Eagles Fairest and Best last night in a count that was very close with his teammate Andrew Gaff. Welcome, Nick. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well done on your season. What was it like last night? It was a big crowd.
Yeah, it was the biggest crowd I've been around all year, because I guess being in quarantine and being over east for the majority of it, to be in a room full of people and even standing next to people taking photos was it was awkward at times, but it was good to finally get back there and do that here in WA.
And going into the event, did you think you're a chance to take out the big gong?
No, I knew I would have probably polled in the top five or so with the year I had, but I missed a game as well. Shannon Hearn and I, the boys say we got dropped against the Bulldogs, but we're rested. So majority of the time, the guys that win the award play every game of the season. But I was like you said, I was pretty close just to get over the top of Gaffey in the end.
Where does it rate for you in terms of all of your seasons? Is this clearly the best one for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think just probably the consistency and being able to play every game was probably the biggest thing. Like, I think I've played some good footy in the past, it just hasn't been in succession of each other. So, I think it's just probably starting to show when you can put all those games together one after another.
Now, you seem to relish that, and I think the last time I spoke to you, you were saying, well, you play a game, you just rest and recovery, and then just go and play another game. You seem to enjoy that. do you reckon that might be something that the AFL might continue with, because it might help you?
Yeah, I reckon they will. I hope they do. I'll be trying to get a hold of Gil and then ask him to do his name next year if it helps me. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed just going out there, playing footy, and then just recovering and then playing again. And, some of those turnarounds were real quick, but I think the boys loved it. We're just happy we're out there playing footy every week.
It also simulates your game time. Can you talk us through the evolution through your career of the amount of game time you've been playing and how much of a difference it makes when you do come on for those shorter bursts and just go bang?
Yeah, I think what people get confused is they thought that I'd had a lot more game time early in my career, but big Coxie never come off the ground. He was so dominant. So I'd sit half the game on the bench anyway. So I've been used to it my whole career. So and then I've been injured, so I have to be managed with my game time, and that's probably carried on the last couple of years. So, with the games being shorter, those bursts means I'm on the ground a bit longer as well, or in comparison to the game percentage. So, I think that'll increase. I think they're thinking of going with more game time next year, so I think they'll have a bit more longer stints.
Nick, when it comes to your palm work, which was sublime, and we saw a replay last night of the one in the forward line, which you knocked down the throat of a man on the move. It just happened to be Josh Kennedy, who was the rover, and he charged in and kicked a goal. Are they things that you guys work on as set plays, or is that just the way it is? You see a bloke on the move and you shove it down his throat. How does it work?
It's probably a bit of both. We have set plays and set moves we do different parts of the ground, whether it's centre bounce or stoppages around the ground. But I think, also over my journey, I've been able to just read where players are as well, and something I pride myself on. And I do that kind of stuff every single day at training and practice, for hours doing that. So it's probably a mixture of both things.
Who's your favourite? Who do you like to tap it to? Every ruckman's got a favourite. If let's say it was the grand final and scores were even, it's the last one of the day. You can only choose one. Who do you want to knock it in front of?
Oh, Luke Shue. I think Luke Shue is probably the guy that I've worked with the most. I've done it for years with. It used to be Daniel Kerr, but I used to love the way he moves around the ground. But, I think if it was game in the balance, it would be Luke Shue.
We've got a name for that too, a special name on the radio. We call it the Natter Shuey these days because it's happened so bloody much throughout the course of you two's career. Now, mate, do you say things to the umpires or something? Don't they like you? You didn't get many votes the other night.
Oh, I don't know. It's funny. Some games, that the boys, it's a midfielder's award. They had a Brownlow Simo was getting into me because I didn't poll in some games. He thought I may have polled, but... Yeah, I don't know what I did. I do get pretty aggressive. I've actually had Amazon little film crew following me around filming, and I wear a mic for most of the games. And, watching some of that stuff back, I think I do abuse other players, my own players and the umpires a bit too much. I didn't think I did. I thought I was pretty nice, but I don't blame them after watching that stuff back.
What about Will Schofield, mate? He's retired. He said some nice things about you last night. And what would you like to say about him?
Yeah, Scully's awesome. I think I said it last night. He's one of the grumpiest, bald blokes I've ever met. But he only does it because he demands success. And, his whole career, he's been surrounded by, superstars when he first got to the footy club and then stars later on. And I think for him, he just had to grind his way through and play footy, which everyone loves. And that just probably is a testament to his hard work. So I look forward to him being on your side, I reckon, for the next couple of years. He'll probably be working alongside you guys. I feel sorry for you. But it'll be very critical in games and commentary and stuff. So we'll have to make sure we win enough games to keep the old man happy.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's going to end up on this side of the fence. Now, what about the youngsters? Who are you bullish on? It was great to see Liam Duggan. I'm really bullish on Liam Duggan. I think he can take the next step next year and become an A grader in the competition. But for you, the youngsters, is there enough there to have another crack next season?
Yeah, our young boys, obviously, I think we played 38 players this year, so a lot of the young boys got the debut and play a few more games this year. And yeah, I'm with you. Liam Duggan's my favourite. I train with him one-on-one for the whole coronavirus break, so I don't know, he's just a good bloke. He's got his mullet, he wears his R.M. Williams, he's a real country kid, so he's no fuss. And he reminds me a bit of Shannon Hearn. He's just a bbit no fuss, he's just out there to play footy. And guys like Oscar Allen are exciting too, and Petrucelli. So I look forward to what the future holds for some of those boys in their careers to come.
What happens from here, mate, for you? Do you watch the grand final? And if you do, who do you think's going to win? And then what's the program for you before you have to start pre-season again?
Yeah, I'll watch the game. I'm not really barracking for anyone. I'm one of those players that, if it's not us, I don't really care. But I was saying last night, one of my good mates, Nathan Broad, he's going for his third premiership. Never would I have thought that. So a young bloke I went to school with and played the Black Ducks is going for his third flag. So I'll be barracking for him a little bit as well. But I have no real plans for the off season. It's a weird one. Normally I try and get as far away from Perth as I can this time of year, but I don't know. I'll find somewhere. I think I'm going to go camping, probably in the far north. So I might hit Hayes up and try to get up towards Northampton way.
Northampton. You can go there. Just not to that other little spot.
Shack Hayes.
Hey, we keep that quiet. Well, he's got Jake Hayes' shack. It's better than mine. I've got a block of land right in front of JK, so one day hopefully I can build him out.
Nice to chat, mate. Take care. Well done on what was a great season. You thoroughly deserved it. And good luck for the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll have a chat to you next year.
Awesome. Thanks very much, guys.
Good on you. Nick Natanui here on Sports Day for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. He finished number one. He just beat his teammate in Andrew Gaff. He was three votes behind Hayes going into the last game, and that was the final, of course, where he got all of the coaches' votes. That is so crucial. He got the 15, which was the maximum. So he got both Nathan Buckley and Adam Simpson's votes when it comes to the coaches' votes. So I think that was probably a giveaway there. And Brad Shepherd finished third, well and truly deserved too, on what was a very, very good season for him in the back half.
Yeah, it was all Australian for him and Natanui. Gaff missed out. I did say last night that I thought Gaff would win, but Natanui certainly deserves it. More consistency this year and more brilliance too with some of his taps. And I think he did impact games for a little bit longer. So well done to all of them. And good to see some youngsters in there as well. Liam Duggan, Tom Barras and Josh Rotham winning an award for their best emerging player. The future looks pretty good with the re-signings of Kennedy and also Hearn. I think they've got one more crack in them, Carl. Will it be next year? That's the big question.
922-118-82 is our number. Maybe you have an answer to Paul Hazelby's question. 922-118-82 is the number. We'll take your calls after.
Sports Day for Kia. Your new Kia Sorento has landed. And the Bottle-O. For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
922-118-82, if you'd like to talk about trading young blokes, lengths of contracts, which is what Hayes spoke about, free agency, restricted free agency, the drug testing regime and its future and how that could be made better, and as to whether you thought that the right bloke won the West Coast Eagles fairest and best. Let's go to Mark, who joins us from Vic Park. G'day, Mark.
Yes, boys. You there?
Yep.
The Rioli thing, I mean, that's got to be taken care of quick. I mean, he has a puff on a wacky tobacco and it's cost him a season. Anyway.
Hang on. That's not why he is in this situation. He tampered with a urine sample. So that's why he's looking at a long suspension. So it's not just, it wasn't about the marijuana that was found in his substance.
All right, Hayes. Now, right. The boys I know, the fly-in, fly-out workers, they'd just rather have a bit of wacky-tobacky than have to have what they have to have because that doesn't show up in the urine sample. So they've got to go to the harder stuff. Work that out.
Yeah, no, I think you're speculating on all the FIFO workers getting involved with some of that behaviour, but different set of rules, different employees and different collective bargaining agreements, I think, in particular with the AFL. Your comments, Carl?
Well, look, I'm going to say that I don't care what the illicit substance is. You're going to be in trouble in any of those industries if you test positive to an illicit substance. It's just the process, and the process needs to be much quicker than the process that we've currently got now in Australian sport. John in Southern River, good evening.
Boner, eh? It's just, yeah, can you hear me?
Got you now,
yes,
mate.
Hello.
Yeah, they were the acts of a stoner. But in the end of the day, the Players Association need to get on to this because they're all worried about mental health, but if they keep doing this sort of thing, they're going to have a lawsuit on their hands. They need to have a certain amount of time. They need to conclude the inquiry and not put people under mental stress for that amount of time.
What do you think suitable?
I think they should be given 6 months to get their act together.
6 months? You still don't reckon that's too long? I mean, I don't see why it has to take any
longer. No, that's plenty of time. But going off the amount of time, yeah, you've only got to have somebody who's a little bit weak mentally and they might have a breakdown and all sorts of dramas. And the Players Association should go and tackle the AFL big time and ASADA and get this sorted out. Because that amount of time is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think we've got to go cap in hand with every sport, John, because what we're talking about is a testing regime that encompasses every single Australian sport and every single sportsman and woman that performs at an elite and an international and national level. So I think that we need to really get the support of every single sport, and I think that's the way in which we need to take action here. I don't think as individual sports we will get very far, but certainly as a collective I think we can. Dave, good evening to you.
Hi, Carl. Hayes, how are you? My question is sort of similar to what you... Well, we're all chatting about the same thing, but you know, I don't get in 2020 that 2020 that we it's taking so long. Like, yes, we know, and Paul just pointed out, we know that, you know, there's also tampering involved, and yes, cannabis, whatever. The point being is that he's done wrong, but it should have been sorted out within a month. I mean, it should have been, it's just like getting pulled over by the RBT. They test you, yep, they send it to the laboratory, they come back, boom, boom, boom. Then, okay, he's proved positive or whatever, or negative, and then they go, and now we've got to look at the next little bit, that you actually tamper with it. Why is it going to be dragged on for this long? And like, it should have been sorted within a month. The other point I was going to say is that, and it's still one of my questions I still battle with today, is why are they getting three strikes? I don't get three strikes, mate. I don't get three strikes as a tradie out there in the real world. I don't understand that. Explain that to me.
Yeah, that is a different program that was put in place by the AFL and the players testing for illicit drugs in their system. Of course, if they do have illicit drugs on game day, they'll still come under the ASADA rules. So it was something to put in there to help with the increase within illicit drug use in the AFL. Has it worked? You can argue. But there hasn't been too many players since Ben Cousins. I know some would have come out of the system and been involved heavily in drugs. But for the most part, it sort of has been effective. In regards to the penalty, I'm with the time frame. I'm with you. It's just taken way too long. I can only think about the legal teams that, yes, you might need a month, two, or maybe 3 months to put them all together. But it has happened before. The Collingwood players that went through this, and also Shane Jack, the swimmer, is still waiting on the same inquiry as Willy Rioli too. So it's not just to the AFL players, and that's the frustration for many, that her life at the moment, while she's doing that SAS show, she's still waiting for her outcome.
Yeah, it's unacceptable, and we just need to, as I said, work and try and get it better. Aaron in Vic Park, how are you, mate?
Just wanted to touch base to see how Ross, the boss lion, is going. Where is he these days?
Well, he's on Footy Classified. I saw him there the other night. He's having his opinion on things. He's been talked about with the sad situation which has engulfed the North Melbourne Football Club with their coach, Henry Shaw. I know that his name has been mentioned. Paul Roos has certainly knocked it on the head. But would they be, you know, looking at someone like a Ross Lyon, you reckon, Hayes? What do you think's going to end up happening at North Melbourne, given that it's not likely that Henry Shaw is going to return as their senior coach?
Yep, absolutely. I think they would be spending some time going through some potential candidates to be there. Ross Lyon would be amongst that as well. But I think he's enjoying his time in the media, to be honest. He's been in the game for so long. We're seeing a different personality, a different side of Ross Lyon. And I think the Melbourne media, clearly they are favourable in terms of Ross Lyon going forward. But you always got to look back and see how the Fremantle Dockers have transformed, I would say, their football club over the last 12 months. And I think that can hinder his chances going forward.
All right, 922-182 is the number. If you would like to talk about some more of the issues that we've raised tonight, we'll clear a commitment. We'll come back and tell you what's coming up after 7. We'll have time for your calls straight after 7 out of the news.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. And the Bottle-O. For your online liquor shopping, visit shopmylocal.com.au.
Just some news headlines for car sales. A car sells every minute on car sales. We're going to be having a chat to AFL Grand Final umpire Craig Fleer. Well, it has been revealed that Gerard Sutton will referee the NRL Grand Final. And New South Wales have begun their State of Origin training today. And last night, the Daily M, which is similar to the Brownlow Medal, was won by Jack Whiten. So he was the Daily M winner there. So just some of the news out of the NRL. Hayes, just having a look at the SKG injury report. SKG Radiology, they care about your welfare and are now bulk billing. There doesn't look like that there's too many troubles for each of these teams going into the grand final. You've got basically Reece Stanley is going to have a test on his knee. I know that you spoke about Jack Stephen, but mate, I don't think that he's any chance of getting a game. We'll maybe ask Harry Taylor in a moment and find out exactly how he is progressing, but I don't know necessarily that he'd be in the mix. And Jack Higgins is probably the only one at Richmond who's going to have a test on his calf, but you wouldn't have thought that the Tigers would be making any changes on last week's performance, and probably likewise Geelong. You'd expect that these two teams were going unchanged, wouldn't you?
I do, Carl. It's a bit different to previous seasons, and last year they did make a change with Marlon Pickett coming in, but that was on the back of a VFL grand final that he played so well in, and a lot of these players that haven't been playing, recovering from injuries, they haven't had that chance to, you know, push their case for selection. So I expect them to be like last week. There was no changes in the games that were played, and I can't wait for it, Carl. It's going to be a beauty. Two very good sides. Two contrasting styles, you must say, as well, with the kicking skills and the way they move the ball of the Cats up against the Tigers, who love to run and carry handball their way through congestion out of the front of the stoppages. The big forward's going to be important. Tom Hawkins, let's hope he is okay. Imagine, Carl, if he had the coronavirus right now and the AFL have come so far. What would you do if you were the AFL if that occurred? Would you just say, okay, let's just play the game, and then you guys have all got 14 days in isolation no matter what after the game? But wouldn't it be bad?
Yeah, it would be bad. For SKG Radiology, they care about your welfare. They're now bulk billing all Medicare rebatable services during this COVID-19 pandemic. We know, and we haven't really spoken about it yet, mate, because we've been busy, but the AFL Coaches Association vote tonight. They voted Ken Hinckley as the coach of the year. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think not many expected him to get his team into the finals, and he was on the chopping block, wasn't he? If he didn't play finals footy this year up until last week, they were the best team in the competition for the year, and he's done a great job reinventing himself throughout the year. Daniel Giansiracusa was the assistant coach of the year, so you wonder if that is a precursor to him getting an opportunity in the future. And Neil Baum also received the Lifetime Achievement Award. Just some other news bubbling away. The Perth Glory, I'm not sure if you mentioned it last night, but Andy Keogh and Brandon Wilson coming back to the club. Good to see those returning players. Good news about Peruno Fornaroli. There is confidence that he will be here. And Diego Castro, too, confirming that he will stay. So all of a sudden, the Perth Glory, in the space of 3 or 4 days, it's looking a lot brighter than it was that period ago.
Yeah, now I don't know if you tuned in and watched the telly last night, Hayes, but JL was there. He was talking about hubs. He's tipped those for 2021. He says that, you know, the players will probably be asked to play more games in shorter space of time. He says the players have already shown that they can handle it. And, of course, that was prior to CEO Simon Garlick also opening up about interstate trips. And he was open to actually spending more time away, playing games in shorter periods of time. Do you think that this is going to be something that we can become to expect as the norm heading into 2021?
I hope not. I think I'd like it to go back to how it was in an ideal world. And I think we just have to wait to see how things play out. And with all the government restrictions being eased in Victoria, I think there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. I think there's maybe a condensed time frame that you could do that throughout the season, like we saw with the football frenzy, that you do it for 1 month. I think the travelling teams, absolutely, that come across here to WA, they may back up and have games. But with that, it does become a logistical nightmare. But we can't forget the fans. They want to go to the footy every second week and barrack for their team as hard as they can, because they've missed out on that right and honour this year. So I think we just need to be too careful, not make too many predictions this early.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what the fans think about that. If you go to at Sports Day WA or send me an email, sport@6br.com.au, I'd love to have a little bit of a look and a read on your thoughts around that. I'm probably of the view that there wasn't much wrong with the game prior to COVID-19, to be perfectly honest. It was a big bubbling machine that was employing a lot of people, and for the most part, they were on the right track. Whilst we were complaining about the congestion, which is still an issue in the game, I'll be interested to hear what Craig Fleer's thoughts are around a couple of aspects of that. But when you consider that we were talking about probably concussion as being one of the major issues in the game, and how we protect the head more, and how we become more consistent when it comes to a tribunal. And I know that you've talked about this previously, where you think that we should just get rid of the tribunal and just leave it up to the match review officer. There wasn't that much wrong with the game, really, was there, Hayes, prior to COVID-19 hitting us?
No, well, printing money as an AFL industry, they were going through the roof. I think this is a good reset to certainly have as well. And just on concussion, Brad Ebert, of course, the retirement. And Cam Sutcliffe, Carl, today retiring, or not retiring, but not being offered a contract going forward. Good player with the Fremantle Dockers. Didn't really work out, did it, for Port Adelaide. Played a few games, but it was a strange recruit for mine at Port Adelaide, but well done on his career. Maybe he'll get another opportunity, but we'll wait to see on that outcome.
All right. Now, we've got Harry Taylor about to join us here on the program, and he has been a wonderful player at the Cats. He has played, I think, a record number of finals when it comes to all the Cats players, to be perfectly honest. So it's really going to be a good opportunity for us to see how he's feeling leading into another grand final. He's been quite incredible, hasn't he, Hayes?
Yep, he certainly has. He's a marvel, big Harry Taylor.
All right, so we will get to Harry, who will join us after the break. 922-1882 is our number here on the program, and Craig Fleer is also not too far away as well. He is going to be umpiring his grand final for the very, very first time, so looking forward to picking his brains. But Harry Taylor next here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have this man on the radio. WA boy from the same area, I think, as Paul Hazelby, to be honest. But Harry Taylor joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, going well, thanks, guys. It's, very exciting to be preparing for a grand final. It's, lucky enough 13 years ago to play my first one and a couple after that. But, certainly very, very exciting and very proud that our club's managed to keep competing and finally get to that last dance.
Did you ever think you would? Obviously, it came pretty early in your career, 2009, 2011. There's been some close calls in recent times, but you're getting towards the end. Did you ever think this day would come again?
Yeah, I think you always, I remember running around the athletics track in Geraldton plenty of times and, some places in Perth in the off-season. I'd go down and run around the Swan River and always in the back of the mind, you're doing that hoping, and probably more hope, I guess, than anything at that point, that your club and your team are going to be able to compete well enough to get you back there. That's one of the reasons why I signed up again to play this year. I just wanted to get back and try to help our team win another flag, and fortunately we're in a position to do it come Saturday.
Now, you're a bit of a prankster, and I was just wondering whether you dropped off some slices of ham to Tom Hawkins, because he was feeling a bit off today. Is he okay?
Yeah, haven't seen him around the traps today, but that's probably a good point. He probably just needs a bit extra food, helping out the big fella. Reported as a bit of a sore throat, but hopefully he'll be okay, and we've got a training session tomorrow, so good to get him back out there, and hopefully he'll be carry right to go come Saturday.
Now, Hub Life doesn't seem to have hurt you blokes one little bit, and particularly when I look at your last two performances at where the grand final is going to be played at the Gabba, both against Collingwood and Brisbane, you've dominated.
Yeah, we've played pretty well there for most of the season. I'm not sure exactly why. It's been a question we've been asked a bit of late, but Scotty tells us we're going to play well there, and fortunately for most of the part, that's come true. So whether it's his influence, Nigel Wappen, obviously a stalwart from that ground as well, and I think Shane O'Bree probably played a little bit of footy there in his early days, so we're fortunate to have a pretty good connection with the ground, and maybe there's a higher power just helping us out a bit, which would be nice.
Harry, you've got a good midfield, great midfield, let's be honest. The forward line is very good, but I want to focus on your part of the ground, because under Matty Scarlett's tutelage over the last couple of seasons, there's some stalwarts in there, some older blokes, and some really tall players that can also add a bit offensively as well. But how important is Henderson and Stewart, Blixarves, Henry and Colajasny, those two players also taking their opportunities this year?
Yeah, they've all been fantastic. We've got a pretty good mix. We call ourselves the Misfits, and we're all a bit different down there, come from different backgrounds, different paths into the AFL, but we've got a pretty good mix who, like to hang out with each other off the field. Pretty laid-back group. That's one thing I definitely noticed compared to maybe some of the teams and groups I've been a part of in the past. The boys down in my end are very laid-back, pretty cruisy. Just go about their business during the week, and then on game day, no fuss attitude, just go and try to win as many contests as they can.
What about Dustin Martin now? He's one of the greatest finals players of all time, if not the very best. Clubs refuse to tag him. Do you think Chris Scott may pull the rein and put somebody like Cam Guthrie to him? Because three Norm Smith medals wouldn't sit well with you, Harry.
No, it wouldn't. It'd be a bad result because not many Norm Smith medalists playing for the losing side. But you're right, he's been unbelievable in, you know, just about every game of his career. But finals, he seems to just rise to the occasion. And it is a good question whether we're going to, you know, put someone with some close attention to him. It makes sense. I mean, all the great players probably should be tagged, in my view. It seems to have gone out of the game a bit now for some reason. But I know it worked when I started my career. Cameron Ling, which obviously, you know, played a lot of his career as a tagger and a very good one, was able to do some big jobs for us in big games. So not sure what the coaches are thinking, but a guy like Martin just needs as much respect as possible.
Harry, win, lose or draw, mate, you'll be playing on in 2021, won't you, mate? I mean, you're a long time retired.
Yeah, that's what they tell me, but not sure yet. We'll just get through this week and potentially take a week or so, hopefully, with the club, and we can work things out. I see my good mate JK signed up for another year, so that's very exciting for West Coast fans. And we'll make a decision after we get through whatever happens this weekend.
When you have a look at the Tigers, mate, and the style of footy that they play, and the last time they played you, gee, that was ugly for Geelong. I think you'd kick one goal up to three-quarter time.
It was. We were really disappointed with that night. We just couldn't get any scoring opportunities. And the ones we sort of did get inside 50, we thought Richmond defended so well. We learned a lot from that game in terms of our ball movement, in terms of how we defended ourselves. And, you know, we fought back a little bit late in the game, but to be honest, it was well and truly over by then. So walked off disappointed, but certainly, you know, learned a lot from it. Hoping we can be a little bit more offensively powerful than we were that night, certainly, because I don't think one goal to zero is going to be much of a game to watch for sure.
No, we don't want that. It needs to be a spectacle up there in Queensland to help out all the Queenslanders going forward. But what about any changes? Do you forecast any changes by your team? Normally at this stage of the year, teams are pretty settled, but Jack Stevens, one that is coming back from a hamstring strain, I think it will be 21 days. Can he squeeze himself in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we've got a couple of boys who have sort of had surgeries and have gone back to Geelong to do that. But apart from that, nearly every player on our list is available, which is extraordinary this time of year compared to where we have been the last few. I mean, last year when we played Richmond in the final, Hawke was rubbed out for a hit on Schofield. Mitch Duncan had an MCL injury, I think. And we might have even had a couple of our players that probably you'd expect to play missing. So to have a full list, a healthy list, and some pretty hungry guys in there is fantastic. And whoever gets picked, I'm sure there'll be a few people that miss out that deservedly could be in the team. But whoever gets picked will certainly be proud and really grateful for the opportunity.
It's very different, mate, to the way that I was analysing you at the start of the season, because you had a number of your key players who were all under injury clouds. Some have had operations. Some weren't necessarily going to be available for the first block of games. And then all of a sudden, mate, there was an 8-week break. Perfect.
Yeah, it's worked out. It's worked out pretty well for us. We've been a bit fortunate and a bit lucky this year, but you've got to take those opportunities where you can and make the most of them. But you're dead right. We had Mitch Duncan and Joel Selwood were just getting to the line at the start of the season. Cole Jasny wasn't playing. I'm sure I'm missing a couple of other names. I'm not sure if Reece Stanley was in the team early either, but to have 8 or 10 weeks off to, you know, prep these guys was a bit of a blessing in a lot of ways. And fortunately, you know, Joel's had a couple of little hiccups, but for the rest, most boys have been able to get through the rigours of the AFL season.
When you were growing up in Northampton, then you went to East Fremantle, took your time, you were a bit more of a mature age recruit. Do you ever pinch yourself with what you've achieved? I look back and go, 31 finals. I played two, Harry. 31 is unbelievable. 3 premierships, 2-time All-Australian. You're playing alongside 3 Hall of Fame legends in the future. You must pinch yourself at some stage, don't you?
Yeah, I do, mate. I certainly do. And I think it's good sometimes to reflect on where you come from, where your beginnings start from a perspective point of view. I think that's important as AFL players. You don't want to lose perspective on the groundings you got. And I was very fortunate to have some great groundings early on in my career, you know, Northampton Footy Club and playing on the school oval, then going down to East Frio, where we struggled a bit. We didn't win too many games, but it gives you a really good appreciation for success when you are fortunate enough to get it, like I've had for large parts of my career. That's something I'm really proud of. We played in 9 preliminary finals in my 13 years, so I've been very, very lucky to always be close. And yes, we would have loved to have converted a few more of those chances into grand finals, but the fact that we keep giving ourselves a chance is something that I'm sure I'll look back on and be very, 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 very proud of.
If this is your last game, I'm not preempting anything, what is next for Harry Taylor in terms of your next challenge in life?
Yeah, I'm not too sure, mate. It's certainly going to involve some fishing at some point. I love getting out in the water and looking forward to doing a bit more of that. We go back to WA in the off-season every year, so we'll do that again this year regardless of what's happening. And I'm not too sure what's next. I love footy. I love being involved in the sport. You know, I love business. There's all sorts of things that I'd love to have a bit of a go at. But overall, I just love working. That's one thing I enjoy doing. I love waking up in the morning, having some sort of purpose, some sort of goal to try to achieve it, whatever that might be, and then trying to stick to it. That's sort of how I've lived my life to date, and that's how I continue to live it for however long I'm on this earth.
Mate, you are going to be playing game number 280, which will level you up with another bloke that I reckon you'd know pretty well, in Andrew Mackey, and that will be ninth all-time at your footy club. Thank you very much for sharing some minutes with us tonight ahead of the big grand final, mate, and all the very best. Look forward to seeing you in action.
No worries at all. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Harry Taylor, he's a legend from the Geelong Football Club, and Hayes, he is just a brilliant bloke.
Oh, he's an absolute superstar. Great bloke from Northampton. They're all good blokes from that way, but it's a terrific career, and he's probably playing good enough to go around again. It's just probably a matter of some list management decisions at Geelong. They are ageing, and I'm sure if he was to win 3, that might be a good way to go out, Carl.
Yeah, it might be. Harry Taylor playing his 31st final. Mm. The bloke that's joining us next is AFL Grand Final umpire. It'll be his first Grand Final and only his 5th final. Craig Fleer will join us next. Craig Fleer. Welcome back to Sports Day. If you missed it, off the top of our program, our sports update for Sullivan Logistics. 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. The grand final umpires have been announced. Matt Stevic, who has umpired 44 finals, will be umpiring his 8th grand final, 5 in a row. Simon Meredith, he has umpired 36 finals. It'll be his 6th grand final. His last was in 2017. And the big news for Craig Fleer, he has umpired only 4 finals. It'll be his first AFL Grand Final. He needs to be congratulated for his great performances throughout the course of the season, and he joins us here on Sports Day. Craig, welcome, mate. How are you? Congratulations.
Going well. Thank you for having me here, guys. It's it's an exciting week ahead.
How did you feel when you got the nod, mate? A bloke that's been in the system for a fair while now, since 2012.
Yeah, it came as a little bit of a shock. You're always hopeful when you make the finals panel that you might be able to get through to the last week, but it still comes as a bit of a shock. And thankfully for me, yesterday I was actually on the golf course when I got the call, so it was a good distraction for me.
No, well done, Craig. Terrific to see. Tell us a bit more about your journey, because you've come through the South Australian pathway.
Yeah, that's correct. So I'm originally from Adelaide, and started umpiring back in 2000 in the Glenelg schools zone, and worked my way up from there to umpire state league footy. And I was the emergency umpire for the 2011 state league grand final, and from there I was selected for the AFL. So it's been a long journey to get to here, but a really rewarding one.
And you left the AFL list, didn't you, in 2014? Why was that, and why did you return?
Sadly for me, I was delisted at the end of 2014. So just like the players, we all go through the list management process. So that was quite a kick in the guts for me. It was not the news anyone wants to hear, but it gave me a couple of options to either throw the hat in the ring and say that's enough for me, or to take a good hard look and work hard and get better and get back to doing what I loved doing and wanted to do, which was umpire AFL footy. So thankfully I took the hard work path.
So when it comes to the hard work path, did they give you a clear indication of what you had to work on to get better?
Yeah, so it ended obviously with the exit interview, and they gave me a very clear understanding of what I needed to work on to get better and to be able to perform consistently at AFL level. And it was their opinion, obviously, that I should work at that back at sample level, and that's just what I had to do. And if, like I said, I could have thrown the hat in the ring, but I'm very glad that I didn't.
Good stuff. That is fantastic. Now, how has it been in hub life for the umpires? We've spoken to plenty of players, and some of them have enjoyed it more than others. How have you coped?
Yeah, it's been quite an enjoyable experience. We're all very apprehensive, I guess, at the start of it all in July when they first said we were getting shipped off to... Well, firstly, I was moved to Sydney for 3 weeks, so I went there first. But it's been a really rewarding experience because most of the umpires have been based in the same location, and a lot of them have had their families up here as well. And for me personally, I've got a four-year-old daughter, and she's been able to meet with other families, you know, boundary umpires, goal umpires and other field umpires as well, and actually grow relationships that she perhaps otherwise wouldn't have been able to have. So in many ways, it's been a brilliant time away.
Always good to look at the positives. Now, I'm eager to learn more about the South Australian umpiring pathway. We know here in the West we've had a very good pathway for a long time and many have gone on. But how's it been for South Australia? Has there been many that have graduated to the top ranks in the last couple of decades?
Yeah, there have been. I think we're probably on relatively similar par with Western Australia in terms of numbers of umpires that have been sent to the AFL or made it to AFL level. And I think as it stands at the moment, I believe we're probably at about four or five umpires from each state that are actually on the list. So being good football states in SA and WA, it's great to have that representation at the top level.
Now, you've been announced. Are you one, or do umpires do this? Do you go forward and say, I want to take that first bounce? I want the picture, the photo, the very first bounce. With it comes a lot of pressure because you've got to nail it. But are you likely to do that?
We did have a brief discussion today. Thankfully, the three of us in Matty Stevic and Simon Meredith and myself are all very strong bouncers and very consistent bouncers. But we've decided that this being my first, and we're all good at bouncing, that I'll be lucky enough to take the first bounce.
Hey, you beauty! That's exciting.
and what about the experience too that you'll be officiating with? I mean, Matt Stevic's already umpired 400 matches, and Simon Meredith 387. They are very, very experienced. Both making their debuts 8 years prior to you, back in 2004.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing because they're two umpires that all of the group look up to and would love to emulate the careers that they've had. And the amount of wisdom that they've got between them is exceptional. So to be able to share this day with them, they're just going to help guide me in whatever way possible to get the job done. So it's going to be awesome to be out there with those two legends of umpiring.
Just going back to the bounce, do you like the bounce? There's been a bit of talk about it in recent times, whether we need it in our game. Where do you sit on this?
Yeah, it's a good question. So for me, I love bouncing, and I like to think I'm pretty good at doing it. So I'm happy to keep it. But I can also understand the flip side argument of not keeping it as well. You know, there's always the discussion of we want it to be random, which is the reason the bounce was introduced. We wanted a bit of randomness about it. But if we want randomness, why don't we just let everything go, even if it is an offline bounce? So it's an interesting discussion. But for now, the bounce stands, and I think it's an awesome part of our game.
Since 2012, how has the game changed for umpires, in your opinion? Has it become a lot harder to officiate?
I would say it has been, and it's purely surrounding numbers around the ball, and us as three umpires trying to adjudicate things that might happen on other sides of packs. You know, sometimes you've got 36 players within, you know, a third of the ground, and trying to see through all that congestion to make a decision can be difficult. You know, there's other ways in which the game has become a little bit easier, but congestion probably plays the biggest part in making our job difficult.
How far have you been running in the shorter matches? Have you got an idea for us?
Yeah, we've got our GPS on every week, and we're running around 11 kilometres every game.
Okay, and what about intensity? Has that changed much given the shorter matches?
Not particularly. I don't think intensity's changed much. I think our numbers for the high intensity work, whilst they are down, they're down in proportion to how much shorter the games are. So, it's purely just a little bit less volume, but the same sort of intensity.
Now, you're obviously a bloke that doesn't mind getting the hoots and jeers because you know every time you blow your whistle, you're going to cop it from one team or the other. That's something that you've always known comes with the territory?
Oh, 100%. You don't become an umpire if you don't have a thick skin. You know, we love the passion that the supporters bring to the game, and they're half the reason we love being out there, because we're just as passionate about football as the supporters are. We just have a slightly different role and a slightly different view to them. You know, the only time it gets a bit disappointing is when some of that abuse or support gets a little bit personal, and that's probably where we'd love it if spectators could, you know, just lift their game a little bit. But we love having them there, and it's great that this weekend we're going to be able to have 30,000 people at the grand final, where we've had games this year where there's been absolutely no one. So it's been an amazing effort to be able to pull all this together.
And just last one from me, mate, before we let you go, and thanks very much for your time tonight, Craig. Really appreciate it. Mate, would you like to see the sort of hub environment continue into next season or not?
Well, that's a good question. I think it certainly has suited some people better than others. But I don't think it really is the direction that we want to go. It has been challenging for us. As much as we've been away for 3.5 months, we've reached a point now where we're really ready to go home, and we want to be back home. So it's going to be an interesting challenge for the AFL next year to see exactly what happens with COVID and where we're able to fly to and how many people are allowed to have at grounds and all those things. But in terms of a hub, my personal opinion is I think it would be tough to do it all again.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that needs to be taken into consideration here is that you're not full-time, are you? I mean, you've got jobs outside of the caper.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the guys are lucky enough to be able to work remotely. Personally, I'm not able to. I've got my own electrical business, and I just had to shut that down to come up here. So there's certainly lots of different challenges that every individual umpire faces. But yeah, there's a lot to think about before a hub happens again.
Great to chat, mate. Thank you very much for talking to us, and good luck. Look forward to seeing you in action on Saturday.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for the chat.
Good on you, Craig Fleer, one of the umpires for the big day, and it's his first grand final for Sullivan Logistics, your trusted storage and overnight freight experts. Sullivan Logistics in it for the long haul. Hayes, your views on the bounce and its future?
Yeah, just before we get to that, you do have to congratulate these guys, don't you? Giving up their jobs, leaving their families as well to go and support the AFL season. And the players have done it, but it's very different because these guys do have their other lifestyles and their other jobs to go to. But the bounce, he sort of is a fan of it because he's good at it. I don't think it adds much value, to be honest, anymore. I think once it does go pear-shaped, they throw it up again and we get the result anyway. So I'd be happy for them to lose that. And maybe it might bring in better umpires, decision-making umpires, because they might not be good enough to do the bounce, which is a key component. But if we keep going this way, Carl, I actually would like the very best bouncers to make sure they take everyone. I don't think there's any need really to rotate it. Get the best, get the ones that can do it, and then at least we get better results.
Look, we either go one way or the other. We keep the bounce, we do it all over the ground, and we don't call it back. Because you know me. I'm a bloke that whinges all the time. I think, well, what are we wasting time for?
Yeah.
Why are we doing it? Let's just throw it up. Unless we just bring back the randomness, which is what Craig spoke about, which I thought was the obvious thing to say, well, we go back to doing it all over the ground.
Don't mind that.
All right, let's clear a commitment. On the other side, we're going to be joined by Liam Guthrie, who was out in the field for the morning of the day's play and at the moment at stumps, WA 2 for 152. New South Wales declared at 6 for 443. Liam Guthrie next. Welcome back to Sports Day, and it is great to have a chat to Liam Guthrie from our West Australian cricket team in the Sheffield Shield at stumps. The New South Wales Blues 6 declared for 443, WA 2 for 152, and a bloke that's toiled away for a couple of days almost before they got finally a chance to head back to the pavilion. He bowled 28 overs and took 1 for 86. Liam Guthrie, good evening to you, mate. Nice to have your company.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
You probably would have rathered that you won the toss and elected to bat, right?
yeah, probably. But we weren't really too sure what the pitch was going to offer. But I think we've done really well to this stage to kind of bowl well and reduce them to what they made, and then and sort of have a bat now and hopefully put on a few over the next couple of days.
Yeah, the batsmen responded pretty well today, but let's focus on the bowlers. Who do you think were some of the best today, and how impressive have you been with Aaron Hardy in his short career so far?
Yeah, Hard's toiled well last couple of days. He's he's obviously still fresh to Shield cricket, but no, he's definitely fitted in nicely and sort of goes about things like an experienced player would, so it's nice to have that. And I think Ash also bowled really well over the last couple of days as well. So,
and what about for you, mate, coming in for Joel Parris? How was your pre-season? Are you starting to feel comfortable at the level?
Yeah. I've made sure I had a good pre-season, came back nice and fit and strong and ready to go. And obviously I got the opportunity this game, so I wanted to make sure I sort of bowled the best I could. And yeah, I thought it came out all right today and yesterday, but obviously not many wickets to show for it. But I think as a unit, we've all toiled hard.
What's your assessment from this point on in the match when you talk about the pitch and obviously it's our turn to bat? Do you think it'll deteriorate a bit like it did last week?
Yeah, we're not too sure at this stage yet. It hasn't deteriorated yet, so hopefully we can. We can bat well tomorrow and hopefully the pitch can stay in sort of in decent shape, and hopefully we can pile on some runs and hopefully get a lead. But yeah, it'll just depend on how we go.
Oh, I reckon she must be pretty flat, mate, given that, you know, the number 7 and 8, Neville ended up 56 not out. Abbott ends up Sean Abbott. He comes in at number 8. He can bat, I know, but he ends up at 60 not out. Was it doing anything?
No, not a whole lot. We were just trying to stay positive, really, and just try and mix it up as much as we could, like change our angles or sort of hold the ball different ways to try and get it to swing or nip off the seam or something. So we just tried different things and would hope it would pay off.
So points-wise now, though, given that the Blues have made the 6 for 443, I mean, if you can match that or better that, obviously you are going to come out of the game with more points, because unless something drastic happens here, it's not likely that there's going to be an outright result.
Yeah, that's it. If we can just hopefully make a lead in our first innings, and that'll give us the best chance of potentially winning the game or being half a sniff or just batting it out for a draw. So yeah, it's still a lot of cricket to be played over the next 2 days, so it'll be interesting.
And you've got a couple of batsmen set too, Cameron Green on 31, but Sam Whiteman 81, and last week we're singing the praises of all the batsmen and even all the bowlers. It was such a even performance across the board, but for him to come back from where he was a couple of seasons ago with so many finger injuries, he showed how good he was last year, and with another pre-season under his belt, he looks like he could take his game to the next level.
Yeah, Whitey batted really well today. He's been working really hard over the last couple of pre-seasons, and he's starting to get the rewards for it now, I think. So he's been really good for us so far, and hopefully he can continue on tomorrow and make a few more.
And what was the prognosis for Joel Parris with his injury? I know you probably want him out of the team so you can stay in there and take your opportunity, but how long until we see him again?
He should be okay for the next game. He just tweaked his hammy, so he should slide back in next game. And I think we've got Lance Morris who hurt his back as well, so he should be all right at this stage as well. So we'll just wait and see. And they'll go through their fitness tests and yeah.
Beautiful, mate. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. Take care. Look after yourself. And we'll see you in action tomorrow.
Sweet. Thank you. Cheers.
Good on you. Liam Guthrie there joining us. Just repeating that WA with a fair bit of work to do. 2 for 152, chasing 443. And in the other game that is running concurrently, Tasmania leads South Australia by 116 runs. South Australia were all out for 195 yesterday, and Tasmania in reply 5 for 311. Wakim made 83. Benny McDermott made 90. And Duran is 82 not out. So poised to make a century. And Tasmania getting themselves into a very, very strong position, which means that South Australia might be going to have two outright defeats to kick off their own hub, which wouldn't be the way that they'd like it. For the all-new game-changing Kia Sorento, which has landed, you can find out more at kia.com.au. We'll finish off with On This Day next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We finish off with On This Day for Baron O'Day because little things are everything. Karen Waters celebrates a birthday today. Born in Rockhampton in Queensland in 1967, he's 53. Australian Rugby League player. His twin brother, Kevin, from 1988 to 1996, he played with at the Brisbane Broncos. So, of course, Kevin Walters is also 53 today. In 2015, he was appointed as head coach of the Queensland State of Origin team. He played with the Brisbane Broncos and led them to their fifth premiership in 2000. And he's also an NRL commentator on Foxtel. Laurie Daly, born in Junee in New South Wales. He's 51 today. It's all about the rugby league players today. Hayes. He played, of course, with Canberra Raiders. He played 237 games. He captained the club from 1998 to 2000. He played in three premierships. He also coached New South Wales in State of Origin 2013 to 2017 and was a Kangaroos test captain on seven occasions. So it is their birthdays today. And a bloke who's injured at the moment from Western Australia, Mitch Marsh, born in Attardale. He's 29 today. Mitchy, happy birthday, mate. He's contracted domestically, of course, to WA and our Perth Scorchers. He's represented Australia in all forms of cricket, making his debut back in 2011-2012. And, of course, he is the son of Jeff and the younger brother of Sean, who was playing in that cricket match that we spoke to Liam Guthrie about. He only made six, so we didn't really want to raise too much of an issue about that with a young fella tonight. And it's also a birthday for Essendon's Jordan Ridley today. Happy birthday to you, Jordan. And it's World Soccer's disaster occurred on this day in Moscow, where 340 sports fans were crushed to death in an open staircase during a game between Soviets and Dutch players in 1982, something that we never, ever want to see happen in sport again. For Baron O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. That's all we've got time for tonight here on Sports Day. We'll see you from 6 o'clock tomorrow.